Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So let's begin with the seventh text now. Yugaitam nimeshena chakshusha prajashayitam shunyayitam jagat sarvam govinda virahena me. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is now describing the emotion of love in separation. In the previous text, he described how he is longing for the time when love for Krishna will lead to exalted feelings of ecstasy. And now within that ecstasy, the summit is considered to be love in separation. We'll discuss about that later. So in this verse he says, Govinda virahena me. In viraha, in separation from Govinda, what is happening? Yuga itam nimeshena. Nimesha is just one fraction of a second. So 1/12 of a moment it is it. Aitam nimesha chakshusha pravrusha itam. There's a the ocean of tears coming out from the eyes. Shunya itam jagat sarvam. The whole world seems to be like a void to me. Prabhupada says, usually translated, a dreary void, completely empty. So, So we'll discuss about this concept of love in separation. So Krishna consciousness, when we practice sadhana, what are we trying to do? The feeling of the presence, feeling the presence of Krishna in his absence. So in his absence means Krishna is present in our heart as the Paramatma. But Krishna as Bhagavan, we have not yet realized his presence. We have not yet invoked his presence. So he's absent. But we are training ourselves to feel his presence. By becoming conscious of him, by chanting his holy names, by worshipping his deities, by hearing about him, by remembering his pastimes, we want to feel his presence. The whole purpose of sadhana is, it's, you know, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Radharani talk about love in separation, for them, they already have love for Krishna, but then they become separated from Krishna. So right now, we are separated from Krishna, but we don't have love for Krishna. So we are trying to develop love for Krishna. And that love means we try to cultivate his remembrance. And by that, gradually, by consistent practice, we invoke his remembrance, we invoke his presence. So we feel his presence in his absence. That is the process of Krishna conscious sadhana. Now, Sri Prabhupada would say that, I never felt separation from my spiritual master. Because he said, I was following my spiritual master's instruction, so I always felt his presence. So that is also, in one sense, he's not with the spiritual master. The spiritual master has gone back to the spiritual world. But he is feeling the presence through the instructions. So there is this, Prabhupada is feeling his presence, but I think the first Janma, second Janmashtami, or some festival after he's in America, so he is there and he writes a letter. He says, no, I'm feeling so much, I think it is Gaur Purnima. I'm feeling so much separation from Vrindavan Dham. Today all my God brothers, all the other devotees, they'll be celebrating. And I am alone in this foreign land. There, nobody practically knows also who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is. So what will Srila Prabhupada do? I mean, how can he cannot speak about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The festivity is there in his heart, but there is no way to directly celebrate that festivity. So he is also in that sense feeling the separation. Oh, I'm not in Vrindavan now. I'm not in Mayapur Dham. I'm away. So we want to feel Krishna's presence in his absence. He is not right present directly in his personal form in our heart. We want to feel his presence. Now, here it is said, Shunyaitam jagat sarvam govinda virahename. Without you, without Govinda, I feel the whole world is empty. It is pointless. So here actually, what we miss reflects what we value. Now, whatever, if I say something is important, and if we don't have it for some time, then how much do we miss it? How much do we say? Suppose the parents have a child, and the child is that young man, young boy, or young girl is gone to a distant place for education now. If they go there for 6 months and they don't call even once, and then they don't even remember their parents, And that means that there is no affection over there. If we value something, if we love something, if we consider something important, when that is not there, we miss it. So now I may say that I consider Krishna consciousness very important, or I consider so and so thing very important. But now we can see how important it is by how much we miss something. So if I am the associate of devotee, then I say I value the associate very much. But then if I go away from that association, how much do I remember that association? How much do I look forward to that association? So something is, oh, that's a nice thing. A nice thing. When I get time, I'll go there again in future. So that's something, okay, I'm valuing it at some level. But when here, I cannot live without it. Somehow or other, I have to go back in the association. I want the association of devotees. That means that is an extremely important need for us. So the highest would be that without it, nothing is of any value. So that is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, shunya itam jagat sarvam. The whole world is void, shunya. It has no meaning, it has no value for me. So the Pandavas also felt like that. Arjuna also says that, now that Krishna has departed, he tells Yudhishthir that yasya kshana viyogena, that loko yapya darshanaha. He says, even a kshana viyoga, even one moment of separation from that person, loko ya apriya darshanaha. This whole world was apriya for me. It's become unattractive for me. And now that person has forever gone away. That person has forever gone away. What can I do now? So there also Arjuna is expressing a similar emotion of separation when he says that, I cannot do anything without Krishna. Nothing has any value without Krishna. See, for materialistic people, Krishna has no value without the world. For devotees, the world has no value without Krishna. What does it mean? So Krishna has, this is actually illustrated in that pastime of Duryodhana. No? For materialists, Krishna or God, Krishna has no value without the world. That is, people ask, oh, you spend 2 hours chanting, what do you get out of it? You're spending 2 hours, they think, you know, how much money do you get? What do you earn by it? Unless they can get something in worldly terms, God, what is the value? Whereas for devotees, the world has no value without Krishna. So when Duryodhana had to choose before the Kurukshetra war, what did he do? He had to choose between Krishna's army, the Dwarka, the Yadusena, and he had to choose between that and Krishna. And when Krishna had come, when both of them had, Arjuna and Duryodhana had come, so Arjuna had come first. So actually both of them had come, and Duryodhana came a little earlier, Arjuna came a little later. So Duryodhana came and Krishna was lying down, so Duryodhana went and sat near Krishna's head. And Arjuna went and stood near Krishna's feet. So Krishna woke up. The first thing he saw was Arjuna. Oh, Arjuna, you are here. Welcome. Krishna got up and he looked around. Oh, Krishna, you are also here. So Krishna said, oh, Duryodhana, you are also here. What can I do for you? So Duryodhana said that, as you know, there is going to be a fight and I have come to seek an alliance with you. Turned to Arjuna, he says, I also come for the same purpose. And Duryodhana said, oh, but I came first. So then Krishna said, yes, but I saw Arjuna first. Anyway, Arjuna is younger to you. So he should be given the choice. And Duryodhana started seething. He wanted to get the best deal over there. So he said, actually both of you are related to me. Therefore, I have decided I will not fight. I will not raise any weapons. So after he decided I will not raise any weapons, then what? He said, on one side, I'll be there as a non-combatant, I'll be an advisor. And on the other side, there'll be Narayan Sena. You can choose whatever you like. Now, Duryodhana was sitting. He said, I lost, you know. What will I do with this Krishna? I want Narayan Sena. Arjuna will soon choose the Narayan Sena, I'll lose everything. And then Arjuna just gently, he says, Krishna, I want you. So Duryodhana almost bursts with joy at that time. Hey, he says, you know, this Arjuna became sentimental and he became foolish. But just to make a show, he conceals, okay, if you have chosen Krishna, then I'll have to settle for the Narayan Sena. And he goes back. And when he goes back to the Kaurava camp, the Hastinapur, and he tells, he celebrates, he says, I got the whole Narayan Sena. And then Bhishma here, he says, what is the use of Narayan Sena without Narayan? He says, you got a bad deal. You got a bad deal. He says, he just can't comprehend it. He says, Narayan Sena. He says, we have such a huge army on one side and Krishna is not even going to fight. So what is the use? So for him, you know, Krishna, he was not very important. But what it is? The God is of no value without the world. That was his attitude. Okay, even if God is there, not there, I want the forces over here. And that's how we see that his mentality, his vision was so materialistic that in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he describes the armies on both sides. So he sees the Pandavas' military formation and he's a little concerned. And then he starts describing Asmakam tu Vishishta Yetan Nibodh Dijottama. He says to Duryodhana that I'll describe the forces on both sides. And he describes the major warriors on both sides. But he does not mention Krishna at all. In the full list, he doesn't mention Krishna. He mentions Arjuna. He mentions Bhima. Now, on Arjuna's chariot, only Krishna is there. But he doesn't notice Krishna. He does not mention Krishna. Because he thinks Krishna is not going to fight. So how does it count? But actually, Krishna, without fighting, you know, he ensures that the Pandavas win all the important battles. In all the important fights, whether it is Karna, Bhima, Bhishma, Drona, Shalya, even Duryodhana, Krishna plays a vital role. So, quite often, when we have too material a vision, God's role cannot be perceived in this world. And when God's role cannot be perceived, it can appear as if God is no value. But God is the supreme value in this world. And how Krishna transforms the whole course of the Kurukshetra war by his intervention, even without lifting any weapons, that actually is representative of how Krishna acts in a devotee's life. At a material level, God is not present as a factor. Now, God underlies all the factors and he moves things for a devotee. So even if materially things are not there, if a devotee has Krishna, from that devotion to Krishna, everything will gradually manifest. So material vision sees that if there are no material resources, what is the use of having anything else? Now, Srila Prabhupada, from the materialistic perspective, had nothing. Now, when he came to America, he had no money, no contacts, no institutional support. Now, he had nothing. And yet, he had firm devotion to Krishna. And from that, the wonderful Krishna consciousness movement manifested within just a matter of few years. So, Krishna is the most valuable thing. But that value cannot be perceived much at the material level. So, when we are pious materialists, at that time, we value Krishna to the extent he helps us at the material level. If there's no help forthcoming at the material level, then we say, okay, what is the use? Except people, you know, they come to God and they pray to God for whatever they want. And if they get it, then bye-bye. And then they go away. So that is not much of not a very sustainable relationship. So here, as I said, from 6, 7 to 8 texts, the consciousness is completely at the spiritual level. So here, what to speak of, you know, making God's value conditional to what value it produces at the material level. Here what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying is, without God, without Krishna, shunya itam jagat sarvam, everything else is valueless. And then he further says, yuga itam nimeshena, that actually one moment seems like a yuga. The gopis also say the same thing in Gopi Gita. They say, Truti Yugayate Twama Pashyatam Kutila Kuntalai Shri Mukham Chate Yada Udikshatam Pakshma Kridrasham. they say that truti yugayate. Truti is one fraction of a moment. It seems like a yuga. Atatiyad bhavan ahanikanana. So at the start of the day, Krishna, when you go out into the forest to graze the cows, from that moment, every moment seems like a yuga. We long, when will you come back? When will you come back? We're just waiting desperately. And then finally, when you come back, at that time, and we're trying to behold you. So in Anand Vrindavan Champu, it is described. And in the evening when Krishna comes back, Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda Mai, the elderly gopas and gopis, they all rush out of their homes and they come on the outskirts of Vrindavan, eagerly waiting to catch the sight of Krishna. And all the younger gopis, they go to the terraces of their houses. And from the terraces, they are beholding. When is Krishna going to come? When is Krishna going to come? And the gopis say that, even when you come back, Krishna, at that time, we want to drink the beauty of your form. And what happens? Our eyelids, they blink. And we can't behold you. We can't behold you. And there Anand Vrindavan says, we feel that if every moment we are not able to behold you, that is like the devastation of the world for us. So, Tvam Apashyatam, we cannot see you. That is the extent of the love of the gopis, that they see Krishna, and even for one moment, if they can't see him, they feel it is unbearable, it is intolerable. So Krishna also reciprocates. You know, Balaram is, so as Krishna comes in from the outskirts of the village, Krishna, Balaram, Madhumangal, all of them are there. All the cows are ahead, Krishna is at the back. And then as Krishna is passing through the area where all the gopis are in the terrace, so Krishna wants to reciprocate with the gopis. So Krishna slows down over there. And Balaram, now because Balaram is the elder brother, you know, Krishna feels a little shy to look at the gopis in Balaram's presence. So he just slows down. And Balaram says, come on, we should go home. I'm hungry. We should take food. Mother must have cooked for you. So Krishna says, I'm tired. You go ahead. And then when Balaram goes ahead, at that time, Krishna is alone and all the gopis are there. So the gopis are looking at Krishna. They're serving Krishna with their sight and Krishna reciprocates. So they are offering their love to Krishna through their eyes. And Krishna looks at them. Every one of the gopis, he looks at them. And he offers his love to them. And every evening when Krishna reciprocates like that with the gopis, now that is the moment for which they are living throughout the day. So for them, even one moment of separation is like a yugayate. And that same Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna in the mood of Radharani. So he's embodying the same mood over here when he says that yugaitam nimeshena. Without you, Lord, one moment is like a millennia. And chakshusha pravrushaitam. From the eyes, tears are coming out. Chaitanya Bhagavat says that the same Ganga that earlier came out of his lotus feet. Now, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would go into ecstasy, that Ganga would come out of his eyes. That many tears would come out. Incessant separation. So how it is that in the spiritual realm, now we may think, is this exaggeration? How can so much water come out? Mm-hmm. So actually in the spiritual realm, whatever is required for the pastime of Krishna, that is present. And so it is described that when Krishna comes back, say, to Mathura, at that time, Krishna is at least 10 years old. Different acharyas are slightly different opinions, but at least 10 years old. And so when he comes back, at that time, Mother Devaki takes him on his lap and she offers him her breast milk. Now we say, a 10-year-old boy, how can he have breast milk? And how can a mother have breast milk in her breast when she has already been pregnant 10 years ago? But actually, the breast milk represents the mother's love. And whatever is required for the reciprocation of love, that all that is facilitated in Krishna. So, Yashoda Mai's breast can have unlimited love because that milk, what is Yashoda Mai's breast can have unlimited milk because that is not just milk, it is her love flowing out in the form of milk. And same with Devaki. So, similarly with the tears that flow out. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna in the mood of Radharani. Radharani's love for Krishna is unlimited. And thus, rivers of tears can come out. And that is his transcendental potency. So this is a verse where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is actually revealing the mood or the purpose with which he descended to this world. His purpose was to experience the love of Srimati Radharani. And that he is experiencing over here. Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that the three reasons where he wanted to understand, basically whenever there is a relationship between two people, now say there is A and B, so A loves B, B loves A. So what happens is Krishna loves Radharani, Radharani loves Krishna. So what does Krishna want to see? Krishna wants to see how much is the love of Radharani for me. And then, so first of all, a person has love for someone else. So Krishna wants to know how much love Radharani has for me. And secondly, that Krishna wants to know that okay, what is it in me that attracts so much love? What is in it that in me that attracts so much love? Now suppose, we are hearing a class and we are not really very interested. We are looking here, looking there. And then you find someone very diligently making notes. Just going on and on and on. You wonder, what is there to make so much notes? Then maybe something interesting goes on. Let me hear now. So, like that, whatever is Krishna, Radharani has so much love for me. So, what is there in me that attracts so much love? So, he wants to experience himself from her perspective. Now, how is it that Radharani is seeing me? What is she experiencing in me because of which she feels so much love for me? And third is, that, so in the first two cases, it is mostly from Radharani's perspective. Now, what is the nature of her love? What is it that attracts her love? And then love is enhanced by reciprocation. See, love can be one-sided, but a loving relationship cannot be one-sided. Now, one person may love another person, that person may not love back. Still, there can be love. But for a relationship, there has to be some reciprocation. So this is from Radharani's perspective, she loves Krishna unlimitedly. But then when she sees that Krishna also reciprocates with my love, then her love increases much more. And so then what is the joy that she experiences when she sees that Krishna loves me back? So in that sense, it's a complete relationship from Radharani's perspective. Okay, what is her love for me? What is it in me that attracts that love? And when she sees my love, what is it that she feels? What is the joy that she feels? So all this, Krishna has come to experience. And actually, Krishna, when he comes to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has come to experience not just the love of Srimati Radharani for Krishna. He's come to experience the love of Srimati Radharani when she is separated from him. When Krishna has left Vrindavan and gone to Mathura and thereafter to Dwarka, at that time, Radharani's love for Krishna attains its summit. So that love, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to experience. And that's why Govinda Virahe Name. In separation from Krishna, what is the love that Radharani feels for him? That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to experience. So, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that Madhavendra Puri is the root of the tree of love of God. And Madhavendra Puri, especially when he was in his last days, he was feeling intense separation from Krishna. And that he would recite a verse at that time. And that verse embodies a mood similar to the mood that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is expressing over here. Ai deena dayardra nath hai mathura nath kadavalok se rudayam tadalok kataram daita bhramyati kim karomyaham. So here, Madhavendra Puri is reciting a verse that is in the mood of Radharani. And he says, Kim karomyam? What should I do now? What should I do? I'm helpless. I don't know what to do. Ai deena dayardra nath hai. Oh Krishna, you are the Lord of the fallen. You are the very merciful Lord. But now, you who are the Nath of the Deena, you have become Mathura Nath. You have left us and gone to Mathura. Mathura Nath kada avalokya se, kada avalokya se. When will I be able to see you? And not being able to see you, rudayam tad alok kataram alok. Not being able to see you, my heart is shattered. Alok kataram. Daita, oh beloved, brahmyati, I am bewildered. Kim karomyaham, what should I do now? So here when Madhavendrapuri expresses this exalted feeling of separation, total desolation, in separation from Krishna, he is actually in great ecstasy. But unfortunately, Ramchandrapuri is not able to understand this. And he advises his spiritual master, oh, don't get sentimental like this. Think of Brahman. Think of Brahman. Now, Madhavendrapuri is furious. He says, at that time, when a devotee is absorbed in ecstasy, separation from Krishna, Brahman. He says, if I see your face, I'll go to hell. Get out of here. He says, just get out of here. So there are very exalted emotions that that a great Vaishnava can experience. And it is preposterous for a disciple to advise a spiritual master, and especially about matters that one doesn't understand at all. So actually Madhavendrapuri is very displeased with him. And as we know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's spiritual master Ishwarpuri serves him very diligently at that time. So at that time also, this particular mood in the Chaitanya Charitamrita is demonstrated of love in separation. So now, when we talk about love in separation, how does it apply for us practically? I said earlier that, you know, what we miss reflects what we value. So taking that point further, you know, all of us, there are certain memories that are special for us. And somehow, because of the nature of our conditioning, the material memories, they are automatically preserved. That means if there has been some sense gratification that we have enjoyed, the mind remembers that and goes back to that again and again and prompts us, come on, do it again, enjoy it again. When can you enjoy it? Now, even in bhakti also, we have had special experiences. We have had cherished memories. But the devotional memories, they don't come back so nice, so quickly. So we have to conscientiously cultivate them. We have to conscientiously recollect them. Why is that? Why is it that the material memory, the sensual memories or the mundane memories, they come back very easily, whereas the devotional memories, they may actually be sometimes much more intense, much more deep, but still, somehow, they don't come back as naturally as we would like. That is because, you know, our consciousness is conditioned in the material direction. Like if this floor is here. Now, if the floor were inclined in that the direction of the door, that side, then if water falls over here, then naturally the water will go in this direction. Now, there might be an exit on this direction also. But if the floor is inclined in this direction, the water will naturally go in this direction. The water can go, but if it has to go here, it will have to be pushed in this direction. Because the inclination is in this, inclination of the floor is in this direction. So like that, in our consciousness, because of repeated past indulgence, the inclination is towards material things. And that is why whenever the consciousness is there, it's like water, it falls. Wherever it is inclined, it will go in that direction. So like that, our consciousness, whenever it is free, whenever it is released, it goes in the material direction. It goes towards worldly memories. So that's why those memories come back to us quite easily. Now, devotional memories, we need to conscientiously cultivate them. We need to, when we cultivate them, say we had gone for some yatra and there were some very wonderful kirtans, or we went somewhere on Govardhan and we had a very beautiful experience over there. Those we need to conscientiously recollect them, cherish them, share them, deepen them. And then we will also have that treasure in our heart. Yes, I had experienced this and I want to experience this again in future. And that way we can move onwards in our bhakti. So the more we cherish these memories, whatever experiences we have had, the more we cherish them, the more we will look forward to them, the more we long for them. So actually, when we have attraction to something, then at that time, the thoughts and the emotions connected with that immediately get activated. Say, when I have, say for example, if somebody is a cricket fan, and they see a particular cricketer's photo, then immediately, oh, in that match, this person hit a sixer, or in that match, you know, he got out for a duck, whatever. As soon as you see that, immediately the memory comes up over there. Because there is some investment of consciousness over there. That is because of the attachment. So So now in our case, with respect to Krishna related stimuli, the immediate triggering of thoughts and emotions doesn't happen. No, it may happen sometimes. Sometimes we may say a beautiful deity darshan. We say, you know, this darshan, it was there on last Balaram Jayanti, isn't it? Or whatever. That sort of triggering of emotions happens as there is more and more investment of consciousness. So when we conscientiously try to recollect the memories, then we are investing our consciousness in that. When we invest the consciousness, then we can actually grow closer to Krishna by that practice of bhakti, by that endeavor to recollect what we have strived to remember. What we have experienced, when we endeavor to remember that, then gradually that memory will become stronger, will become more accessible. And then we will be able to spiritualize our consciousness more easily. So, you know, in one sense, I just... We talk about purification. Purification means to change our default definition of happiness. All of us have some definition of what happiness means. Somebody, happiness means eating good food. Happiness means watching a movie. Happiness means, going to a beach. Whatever, all of us have certain ideas of happiness. And when we become purified, so now this is we have a default definition. Default means automatically our thoughts go in that direction. When we become purified, then our default definition of happiness changes. Because happiness means, coming in the association of devotees. Happiness means kirtan. Happiness means studying shastra. Happiness means doing devotional activities. So that change happens gradually. To the extent that change is happening, to that extent we are becoming purified. And in this case, for feeling this love and separation, you know, our desires are not just linear. They are also triangular. I'll explain what this means. And normally we think of linear desires means, I am here, the object is here. So for example, we see some sense object and we feel desire for that. That is a linear desire, the desire between me and the sense object. So normally our desires, we think, are like this. I see something, I get attracted. That's one way in which desires are generated. But desires are not just linear. The desires are also triangular. Triangular means what? Say, in America, most people don't know anything about cricket. So when, if they come to India, if some American who doesn't know much about cricket, they come. So what do you think about cricket? Cricket is that insect. Now what do they think about it? They don't even know about cricket. But suppose an American comes to India and then they find that people are so mad after cricket. Thousands of people are cheering when one shot is hit or whatever. Then they start, what is this cricket? They start learning about it. And 6 months later, they are also cheering in a cricket match. So what has happened? First time, if they came and saw a cricket match, they may not make any sense. What is this? There are people, there is somebody holding a stick, somebody throwing a stone. What is happening? So just looking at it may not kindle any attraction. But by seeing how many people are mad for cricket, what is there to be so excited about? Then some excitement is stimulated in it. And then the interest develops. That means desires are triangular over here. Triangular means this is the cricket match, this is the person who has come from America, and this is some Indian cricket fan. So just looking at that cricket match, not much interest comes up, not much attraction comes up. But by seeing some cricket fans, and seeing how much they are mad after cricket, the interest develops. So in that sense, the desire is triangular. It's not just linear between us and the object. It is between us, the object, and someone who is attracted to that object. So, and we see this is not just in sports, a field like sports. See, how do most people get into alcohol? Well, there's somebody who tells them, this is cool. Somebody says, no, I don't drink. Hey, babies don't drink. When are you going to grow up? And whatever they tell, come on, enjoy. So some persons tell them, you drink and enjoy. And that's how they get the desire. So our desires are not just linear, they're also triangular. And this is especially important in the path of bhakti. Because in bhakti, if you just come to the temple and see some deities, okay, this is a nice, well-decorated statue. But when we see some devotees, say pujaris year after year serving the deities, or some people coming and very prayerfully, reverentially approaching the deities. Really, what is that? What is this so excited about? What is there in this? Or we find somebody who loves the Bhagavad Gita, loves the Bhagavata, loves the CC. Okay, this is a book, I read it. But then somebody just, they keep reading it almost every day and they get new realizations. They are so excited about it. Then by that, there must be something special in this book. So in bhakti, it is not so much that just by perceiving an object, our desire will come. It is not just by say, beholding the deities or looking at a book, the desire will come. Yes, some spiritual desires may awaken by that. But to a large extent, our devotional desires arise or increase when we see someone who is enthusiastic about the thing. So we see someone who is very enthusiastic about book distribution. What is there in this book distribution? Let me also try it out. Somebody is very enthusiastic about studying scripture. What does this person get? Hours and hours they sit and study. Let me find out. So what happens for us, the love in separation, when we talk about it at our level, it will happen primarily when we associate with someone who has that love in separation. So if I want to develop my, increase my attraction for the holy name, I need to associate with someone who is very eager to chant the holy names. If I want to increase my attraction for study for Gaur Leela, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then I have to associate with those who are very attracted to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that way it is by their association that our attraction will increase. So right now, no. When we are separated from something, from some devotional activity, we may or may not even miss it. Okay. It's okay. Even if sometimes we say, I don't study scripture. See, we may not even miss, oh, I didn't study scripture for 1 week, for 15 days, for 1 month. We may not even miss it. Because right now, we don't have that much taste for it. But if somebody has that taste, they regularly study, regularly read, and their association inspires us. Yes, I want to do this. So here, I'll conclude with one point about this. That here, separation is to love what wind is to fire. Now what does it mean? You know, there is a big forest fire, and then a wind comes over there. The forest fire itself is bad enough. But if the wind comes, the forest fire will become blaze much, much, much more. So like that, for the great devotees like Radharani and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu here, for those who have great devotion, when there is separation, their love is like a forest fire. And when there is the wind of separation, that forest fire becomes even bigger. Their love becomes even more and more and more when there is separation. Now, unfortunately, our love for Krishna is not like a forest fire. It is like a candle. So what happens when the wind comes? The wind extinguishes the candle. And if I think, you know, okay, I'll become separated from devotees, then my love for devotees will increase. No, when we become separated from devotees, our devotion will die practically, it'll get extinguished. Because right now, our love is very tiny. So we cannot artificially artificially jump to the level of love and separation. Right now, we need association, we need connection. And by that connection, the affection, the attraction will develop. And afterwards, even if there is some disconnection temporarily, they'll still we'll be able to move on in our bhakti by the love that we have developed. So to summarize, we talked here about love in separation. And we discussed how Krishna consciousness, in practice sadhana, that means they are trying to feel the presence of Krishna in his absence. So for the devotee, for the gopis and other exalted devotees, they have love for Krishna and they feel separation. For us, we are separated, but right now we don't feel love. But by invoking his presence repeatedly through the practice of sadhana bhakti, we'll start feeling affection for him. Then we'll feel separation from him. And you know, separation means what we feel separated from, that reflects what we value. Okay. So I did not specifically elaborate this, but start with whatever Deepan works at our stage. That means that whatever it is, an aspect of bhakti we feel attracted to, we try to cherish that, and whenever we are not able to do that, we cultivate some eagerness for that, cultivate some longing for that. And that way, our love for Krishna will grow. And then in that connection, we discussed how for Shunyaitam Jagat Sarvam Govinda Virahime, for devotees, the world is of no meaning without Krishna. But for materialists, Krishna is of no meaning without the world. So the example of Duryodhana in that connection. And then contrasted that with Arjuna. And then we discussed about how our memories, whatever we have, because our consciousness is inclined in the material direction, material memories naturally come back to us. But devotional memories, we have to conscientiously cultivate. Whenever we have some special experiences, we treasure them, we discuss them, we relive them, and that way our attraction to Krishna will increase. And that connection mentioned how our love is, desires are not just linear, they are triangular. So by associating with those who have attraction, our attraction will develop. And last time I mentioned about how separation is to love what wind is to fire. So for the advanced devotee, love and separation is a wonderful aspiration. It's an extraordinary experience. But at our stage, look, we have to try as much as possible to avoid separation. Because when we're separated from devotees, quite often that may weaken or extinguish the flame of our devotion. So any comments or questions? Yes, sir.
This morning you were, from now, love and separation, this morning you were explaining that deep emotion, devotional emotion, must be aligned with the scriptures, otherwise it will be judgmental or sentimental. That's how you put it.
Yeah, right.
So be transcendental. That's what you say. Mm. And I was like reflecting back that sometime back I studied about Uddhava's experience of Rajadham. Mm. Where he could not do either way. He was trying to see Nanda Baba's deep emotional separation in love. He thought himself, as for Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explained, that if somebody does not have a love for God, then you can tell, please develop love, cry for God. But here Nanda Maharaj is crying so much, I cannot tell him cry more. That will be like torture. He's feeling torture, love in separation. But at the same time, if I sent by Krishna, if I don't do any service, so he was so bewildered, he only think he took credit that I'm fortunate to witness. But his all endeavor, both sides, was failed. So what is your view on that?
Mm. Yeah. So Uddhava comes to Vrindavan. There he feels that he sees the exalted love of the Vrajavasis, and he feels that, you know, what can I do for them? They are already having such exalted love, and how can I pacify them, basically? So, actually, there is, even when there is separation, I'm going to speak this actually in the next class a little bit more, last class, but I'll speak a few points here. That in the Damodar Ashtakam, Sanatana Goswami has written a commentary for that. And there he says that in the fourth and fifth text, there is a prayer that let my mind be absorbed in remembering you. And I don't want any other remembrance except you. What, thousands of other blessings are of no use to me. Varam deva moksham na mokshavadimva, achanyam vruneham varesha adapiha, idam deva purnatha gopala balam, sadame manasya avirashtam kimanye. What else do I want? So there he is saying, let there be the remembrance of Krishna within my heart. And the same thing he elaborates in the next verse also. Now after that, in the sixth verse, he's actually saying that I want to see you with these eyes. Edhya akshidrushya. Namo Deva Damodar Ananta Vishnu, Prasida Prabho Dukkha Jala Abhimagnam, Krupa Drishti Vishtyati Dinam Batanu, Grahanesha Mamagyam, Edhya Akshi Drishya. And with these eyes I want to see you. Sanatana Goswami explains there that actually remember that seeing Krishna in the heart is wonderful. It is also a very exalted stage. But still a devotee desires to see Krishna directly, Sakshat, with the eyes. And that is an aspiration. That is also exalted aspiration of the heart. So when we say love in separation is a very exalted emotion. So, but that separation is anticipation. It's filled with anticipation. When will there be union? When will there be union? So Uddhava, he's caught in a dilemma when he sees the Vrajavasis that I have to pacify them. So how do I pacify them actually? So initially, he doesn't know about the glory of the love of the Vajivasis. So therefore, he thinks that maybe I can give them some, if they are feeling separation from Krishna, they may be thinking of Krishna as, know, as their own child, and that's how they feel separation. I will give them spiritual knowledge. I'll give them knowledge about Krishna's omnipresence, and then they can sense Krishna's presence, and they can be satisfied by that. But when he actually sees them, he says that they are at such a high level. I cannot give them that knowledge. I cannot do that for them. They are already transcendent. So what can I do for them? So eventually, what he does for them is, he especially not just for Maharaj Yashodamai, actually for the gopis, he speaks Krishna's message to them. And he doesn't just speak that message, he actually elaborates that message. And through that, he stimulates their remembrance. So they are already remembering Krishna, but when we love someone, we want to know more and more about that person. So by giving them more content by which to remember Krishna, he relieves the separation of their heart. He of course assures them that Krishna, as I said, I'll come back and he will come soon. But till he comes, he relieves their relieves the feelings of separation by giving them more absorption in Krishna, by speaking about Krishna. So actually he realizes that their love for Krishna is much, much greater than my love. And so in that sense, the Uddhav Gita, that section, not the Uddhav Gita, the Uddhav Sandesh Upakhyan, that section of the Bhagavatam where Uddhava goes into the message, that is actually, in one sense, a conflict or a confrontation between Aishwarya Bhakti and Madhurya Bhakti. So Uddhava is in the mood of Aishwarya, and the Vrajvasi is in the mood of Madhurya. And he says that, you know, I just want to become a shrub in Vrindavan so that I can get the dust on the gopis' feet. So that how the Madhurya Bhakti is much, much higher, Uddhava recognizes that. But then he has also got a service. So he assists in that service by speaking about Krishna's pastimes. So his plan is initially to speak about Krishna's omnipresence. He's saying, I'll elevate them to a higher level. But he's like, they are at such a higher level. So all that I can do is speak Krishna's pastimes. And by speaking Krishna's pastimes, he relieves their separation to some extent because he gives them more memories of Krishna. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Yes, Janmashtami.
Regarding this devotional memories need to be conscientiously preserved. And you mentioned how we should share these memories with others. Now, it's not a very common practice. I mean,
okay.
For instance, the internal miracles that take place, you know, when Krishna comes to us and it really deepens our commitment. That's something that, you know, sometimes I'll share it, but I don't really talk about these things. Is it prideful?
Yeah.
Or, you know, there's another point, you know, before I finish my question. I remember when I was preparing to teach Ragadoga Bhakti and make the devotion, there's a devotional principle that externally one functions as a sadhaka. Internally, there's this whole cultivation that's going on, but that's not something that one reveals to others.
Okay, yeah.
So,
I agree.
There's a dynamic tension here which
definitely.
You're trying to figure out. You know,
yes, for you, definitely.
When you cross the line and you ruin the gift that Krishna's given you internally, or did you
that's true.
Taint it somehow,
okay.
Or when is it enhanced?
So, it is said that now, should we share our devotional memories? But often these memories are considered to be like gifts of Krishna which are to be kept private. We are not meant to share that with the world. Externally we speak about, externally we act as sadhakas. Yes, that is true. When I talk about these memories, it is more in terms of not sharing publicly with everyone. But if you have some very close friends, especially, brought up this point. I was talking about sharing in terms of if say two, three devotees have gone to a distant place, gone to yatra together. And then they had some special experiences at that time. And then they meet each other. And then they remind each other. So it is not so much in a public class we talk with everyone. But when we are already close, we have some shared memories. Bringing those together, then that reinforces our remembrance of the sweetness of devotion. It doesn't necessarily have to be very exalted memories also. It can be just we did some difficult services together. We met some challenges and we did something valuable in Krishna's service. So those memories, they can actually they can actually remind us of the good times we have had in bhakti. See, whether we are devotees or non-devotees, at a material level, problems keep coming. So, adhyatmik, adhibhautik, ayudaivik, these kleshas keep coming in everyone's life. And so, sometimes at a day-to-day basis, what difference devotion has made in my life, we may tend to forget that. So there are, you know, if we look back at our past, now, the past is never like a calendar. Okay, this day, this day, this day. In the past, you know, there are many plateau, many plains, and suddenly there are mountains. If you look back at our past, there will be months and months and months, and within that, there are some moments which are really extraordinary. They are like peaks, mountains in our memory. And then again, there is, now every day something eventful happens. But that is not so impactful or so consequential from our perspective. So the past, when you look back at it, it's not just a linear stretch of time. It is a vast stretch in which there are some striking peaks. So now, those peaks are the times when it could be, we were able to do something nice in Krishna's service, we had some nice interactions with devotees. So I was not talking so much of, say, intimate remembrances of the heart, which are, say, for Raganuga Bhakti's level. I was talking more of, we might have had some sweet interactions with some devotees. We had some great experiences while doing some service. So it's just like when Krishna and Sudama meet together. No, they discuss how they spent time in their Gurukul. And they remember, oh, we went out that time, and then there was fire, there was a big storm, and we were left alone in the all night we spent together. So that is not so. It's not. It doesn't have to be an esoteric memory to be a devotional memory. Within devotional memories, there are esoteric memories, which should be private, as much as possible. Of course, with some small circle can be shared. But if you look at devotional memories, there can be many non-esoteric devotional memories also, and those are also inspiring in their own way in our bhakti. And if we treasure them, if we share them, that also helps us in moving onwards towards Krishna. So, it has to be actually according to individual nature, according to audience, whether we share it in a group or not. But as far as our personal recollection is concerned, sometimes sharing reinforces the memory also. So, you may decide with whom to share, with whom not to share. And, okay, I'll give a simple example that says how somebody came to Krishna consciousness. Now, we all have our story. And if we look at that, how I came to Krishna consciousness, I might just narrate the story linearly. Okay, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened. But what I found is that the same event, if I look at it 5 years afterwards, if I look at it 10 years afterwards, I look at it 20 years later, I can see more of, you know, how Krishna arranged things and how Krishna, there's so many things that worked out at that time by which I came to Krishna's lotus feet. So our appreciation for that can increase. So I've written an article on my website called Share Your Story. So Share Your Story, S-H-A-R-E is an acronym. You know, S-H-A-R-E, share, that is an acronym, 5 reasons why we should share our story about why we came to, how we came to Krishna consciousness. So then I explained how, you know, it can actually sublimate our own memories, it can reinforce a heart-to-heart connection with Krishna, S-H-A-R-E, I've given all that. So I'm not talking about esoteric memories. Even in our devotional course of life, whatever special events have happened, if we recollect them, they can become a treasury that can inspire us in our bhakti. The whole process of bhakti, in one sense, is to make our memory our treasury. In the process of bhakti is to make our memory our treasury. You know, the great devotees, they just absorbed in the remembrance of Krishna. And they're ecstatic in the remembrance. So now to make our memory a treasury means what? At one level, we develop love for Krishna, and then the thoughts of Krishna fill our memory. But we can also see that, you know, I already have some valuable memories. So I recollect them, I cherish them. And then that also helps me to have to have some spiritual direction for my thoughts when I'm looking at the past or when I want to think about Krishna. So I feel devotional memories which are esoteric cannot be shared, but devotional memories which are non-esoteric, they can be shared. Does that address your question? You had something else in mind?
I've sometimes in public, sometimes I get class on how you came to the body, and it's filled with esoteric episodes. And I felt it was okay, but then, you know, when I came across this aspect of Raghunandan Bhakti, this is really unusual. I mean, really on a miracle platform. But, you know, and then the devotees liked it, but I'm not really sure, you know, whether it seemed like it was okay to do, but maybe there was some pride in it, I don't know, you know, that Krishna just picked me up and showered me with incredible mercy. But I'm not exactly sure why the esoteric side, you know, I mean, I can understand that in the Raghunandan Bhakti platform, because it could easily become contaminated, you know, with the pridefulness or something, look at how advanced I am or whatever. But is there other reasons why this esoteric sharing shouldn't go on? Or?
Okay. So why should the esoteric memories not be shared? I think one main reason is that sahajayaism is always possible. That if the sharing of esoteric memories becomes the highlight of say, devotional kathas, you know, say somebody comes and gives classes and they tell, you know, how, you know, I had pastimes with Jagannath came in my dream, or Narasimha came in my dream, and now all those things, if they start becoming the main content of our classes, then that will be, you know, anybody can start claiming that. And how do we really know? Then we have to become judgmental. If this person advanced, actually the Lord came in his dream. This person didn't happen like that. So we have to be careful about that. So there is, there are the scriptural pastimes that are described. They are given in scripture, they are repeated by acharyas, and they are at a very exalted level. Now, there can be some special incidents that happen in devotees' life also, and they can also be discussed, but they are not the main content of our study, of our recollection, of our discussion. They can be additional, they can be very inspiring, and they are important in their own way. But it is not that we will have classes on some devotees' pastimes. Occasionally, some devotees come from a distant place. Once in a while, it is okay. But there is, with all due respects, there is something which is Shastra Praman, and then there is Rupa Goswami said also Shastra Praman, and there is Loka Praman. Loka Praman means that which is talked about by people who are holy. It also has some authority. Like we go to Vrindavan, there are so many pastimes of Krishna which the Vrajavasis tell. Now, they are not there in Shastra. Many of them are not there in Shastra. But if they are in harmony with the mood, we discuss those pastimes, we relish those pastimes. But you know, those are not the pastimes that are going to come in the Krishna book. Those are the pastimes which are there in the 10th canto. So there is, even within Krishna Leela, there are levels. Those which are given in Shastra directly, they are actually far more important. Others can also assist or embellish the description of that pastime, but there is a difference. So this whole one aspect could be that the esoteric memories, when they are discussed, it can encourage sahajayaism. Everybody can start saying that these are my memories or these are my experiences. And then where does it stop? It will become very difficult to decide it. You know, in the Christian tradition, around 4th or 5th century, for 3-4 centuries after Jesus came and went, there are many Christians, saints or non-saints, saying, Jesus spoke through me, Jesus spoke through me, Jesus spoke through me. And there was complete doctrinal chaos. And in the 5th century, the Catholic Church had an ecumenical council, and they had a doctrine called the doctrine of cessation of revelation. He said, now revelation has stopped. Now no more revelation is happening. So, by then they tried to avoid the subversion of the church authority. But the point is, every tradition has to, there is a core that is coming from the past, and there is a living tradition also. But the living tradition is not meant to supersede the original tradition. It can supplement the original tradition. You want to add? You add something for you? Or,
I want
yes.
to say that when the Lord appeared to Mother Aditi, and He revealed that he will appear from our home, and He told her that do not reveal this to anyone. So then I was thinking related to that, Gadadhar Prabhu told to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri, in Chaitanya Bhagavad explained very details that since I revealed the secret realization of my mantra, I cannot focus anymore. Can you reinitiate that mantra? Then Mahaprabhu says, no, your guru is still alive. Say he's not here. Say he will be here soon. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur made a very heavy comment on that. When somebody's guru is present, you should not take the initiative. But if somebody revealed the secret, like Gadadhar Prabhu did, then he should be energized by another senior devotee's chanting so that he can continue on.
Oh,
I don't know if it is what kind of esoteric of secret, but.
Yeah, I don't know. There's that other pastime also, I think. Ramanacharya has given that mantra by his spiritual master.
Goshtipurna.
He said, don't reveal it to anyone.
Yeah.
And then he goes and reveals it to everyone. And that is seen as compassion also. So, at least this is not talking about esoteric. This is a little more different. It is talking about the potency of the mantra.
Mm.
Here it is more talking about the esoteric aspect. I think my main understanding is Sahajiyaism, the protection against Sahajiyaism. I'll try to find out more. If I get something, I'll let you know. Yes.
Just one observation and then a question.
Yeah.
You were talking about the principle of the triangle, so I was just kind of relating that to some extent. We understand it's Krishna's pastime, but with Srila Prabhupada, that's how we first met his spiritual master.
Yeah.
And the encouragement of a friend, he didn't want to go.
Yeah, right. Beautiful.
So then my question for you, talking about material memories as automatically preserved and emotional memories conscientiously. Is there a stage where that is reversed?
Yeah. So is it that's reversed, that and sometimes the spiritual memories will become natural, automatic, instead of our material memories? Yes, that is the stage when the mind becomes our friend. Yeah, Krishna says the mind can be the enemy and the mind can be the friend also. So when we say the mind is enemy, that means the mind naturally goes in undesirable directions. But when the mind becomes attracted to Krishna, then the mind naturally goes towards Krishna. You know, there is this pastime of the gopis where Krishna has gone away from the gopis and the gopis are feeling great misery and separation from him. And they think that, you know, what to do? Then one of the gopis gets the idea that, oh, you know, when the yogis, they feel misery, they transcend misery by practice of yoga. So let us do yoga. And now the yogis do yoga to remember Krishna. The gopis do yoga to forget Krishna. And they get absorbed in yoga. And they're thinking, and then they sit down in yoga. And as they're trying to forget Krishna, suddenly one of them remembers Krishna. She starts speaking about Krishna. And as soon as they start speaking about Krishna, the other gopis start speaking about Krishna. And they all get lost in speaking about Krishna. And lots of time goes away. And then one, hey, we are supposed to forget Krishna. Then they all start trying to do yoga again. So in their case, their thoughts naturally go towards Krishna. So usually, it is that, it's like if we consider climbing up a mountain, and we consider the various stages of bhakti as like climbing up a mountain, within that, the anartha nivritti is like a very steep climb. So the stage of anartha nivritti is a place where we have to constantly keep, like if I'm going by cycle up, and if I stop pedaling, I just go back. So like that, in the anartha nivritti stage, you have to constantly keep endeavoring to rise up. And it is a steep climb up. After anartha nivritti, when there is nishtha, then the climb sort of, it's not so steep, it tapers off. And then from nishtha, there is ruchi. And from ruchi onwards, practically, it is just a matter of time for the purification to advance towards attraction. So in the anartha nivritti stage, or from till nishtha, bhakti is very effortful. But after nishtha, from ruchi onwards, bhakti becomes largely effortless. So at that time, when ruchi means, we already have a taste in Krishna, our asakti, we have attraction to Krishna. So at that stage, naturally the mind goes towards Krishna. So it does happen. It is a long way off, but it does happen. When the spiritual memories will become natural and the material memories, they will not come. In fact, they will just go away. Even if we have that experience, we forget it soon. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Yes, Mataji. Okay. Yeah. So, is there any way to differentiate between emotional experiences and transcendental experiences? It's difficult because the even transcendental experiences involve emotions. So, largely speaking, two things we could say. One is that whether the experience is in accordance with Shastra. There is that pastime when one devotee came to Prabhupada and told, Prabhupada, you came in my dream and you told me to take LSD. So, Prabhupada said it was not me, it was Maya in my dress. So, actually, here, if we are getting some experience which are actually not in accordance with Shastra, then that is one level, one way to understand that this is questionable. And then another thing is that if the effect of it is that it actually doesn't take us closer to Krishna, it takes us away from Krishna, then we can keep it at a little distance. But overall, if there is a devotional experience which we have had, then rather than worrying too much about the nature of the experience itself, we can focus on whether it can be seen in a way and I can go closer towards Krishna. So yeah, sometimes I may participate in the kirtan and I may just get tears in my eyes. Now, are the tears coming because I'm experiencing Krishna, or it might just because I love music very much and just the music is so nice that causes me tears? Now it may just become too hyper-analytical to go into that. As long as it is in the ambit of Krishna Bhakti and it inspires me to go deeper in my relationship with Krishna, and that is fine. Largely it is whether it is according to Shastra or not, that is the main parameter. And ultimately, when we are in the sadhaka stage, even the transcendental will be experienced through the mind only. Because the mind is the tool by which we feel. So mind, just like, you know, whether I am speaking mundane sound or I am speaking spiritual sound, it at the material level, that sound is going to manifest through the throat. The throat is the tool for the speech, whether it is mundane or it is spiritual. So like that, for all emotions, the mind is the tool in the conditioned stage. So whether the emotions are material or they are spiritual, they are actually going to come through the mind. So if what I am speaking, how do I decide whether it is spiritual or whether it is material? It is based on, I look at whether it is according to Shastra, then I understand it is spiritual. If it is not according to Shastra, then I understand it is material. So like that, once the emotions or the experiences come to us, you know, whether they are in harmony with scripture, then we accept that they are spiritual. Or whether they take us closer to Krishna, then we can say they are spiritual. Does it address your question? Thank you, Mataji. Yes. Yes, Bhadra.
In the Gopi Gita, gopis are saying that in one moment it's like yoga. But here, the Lord Chaitanya says, then it's.
Okay. The question is that the gopis are saying one moment in separation from Krishna is like a yuga, where here it is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying that it is like 12 years. So the word that is used in Sanskrit is yuga again. Yuga itam nimeshena. In the translation, it said 12 years or more. See, we actually, when we talk about chronology in scripture, there are different systems of chronology that are given. So So in the Purana, especially in the Bhagavad Purana, one kind of chronology is given. But if you look at the Manu Samhita, there is another kind of chronology that is given. So that means scriptures, the dimension specifics are not extremely important. They're important, but they're important more as indicators of something. They're not important in the exact value that is there. You know, in the 11th, 12th chapter of the first canto, when Krishna comes back from Hastinapur to Dwarka. So at that time, the path is described. You know, Krishna goes to this place, this place, this place, this place, and then he comes to Dwarka. And Prabhupada writes in a purport over there that, so sometimes geologists may try to trace the exact path by which Krishna came from Hastinapur to Dwarka. And he says, this is an impossible task because the earth's geology keeps changing. They can do their research, but as far as we are concerned, now, we are happy that Krishna has reached Dwarka and is going to perform pastimes with his devotees now. So, the factual details in scripture that are there, they have significance in the sense that they indicate certain things. But if we go too much into the specifics of that, we can just get caught up in that. So here, the principle is that one moment appears to be like a very long time. Now, the word yuga itself can be translated in different ways depending on different frames of reference. But the point is that one moment seems to be like a long time. That's the essential principle. Okay. Thank you. Yes, please.
Regarding the
question,
Gaurakaruna Darshini's question about how do you differentiate between transcendental experience and emotional experience? The transcendental experiences, one way that could be done is that there's an alteration of consciousness, in other words, an experience is transcendental bliss. It seems to verify Krishna's psyche.
But how do we know the bliss is transcendental? That is also a question.
Well, I mean, there's quite a distinction, at least from my experience, between spiritual bliss and material happiness. I mean, is there I don't know if this is too esoteric to speak.
No, okay.
But, you know,
I think
the kind of ecstasy that you experience, like, say, I remember coming to Vrindavan after doing a big Christmas marathon in America with book distribution, and just, my gosh, it was amazing. And the kind of reciprocation that one would experience with the devotee, but it was deep. Like showered with bliss. So sometimes these experiences are accompanied like that. That seems to give some validity. And what else is it coming from? You don't experience that type of thing.
Yeah, so if we feel uplifted, if we feel that we are going closer to Krishna by that, then, and we don't get any similar experience anywhere else.
Yeah.
That's true. I think in the 11th canto also there is a verse, Bhakti Paresha Anubhava Virakti Ranyatracha. So that Paresha Anubhava if we get, and that's also a good indicator that there is Virakti Ranyatracha. We don't care for other experiences. Like in India, often Bhagavad Katha is like a pious form of entertainment. So there are people who sometimes hear some Bhagavad Katha on TV and they may hear about, say, how the gopis are separated from Krishna. And these people may seem to cry tears. And then the Bhagavad Katha gets over. And then they change the channel, some movie song is going on. Some heroine is saying, I am separated from the heroine. They are crying tears there also. So actually there is no virakti ranyatracha over there. So in one sense, if we have transcendental experiences, that takes us closer to Krishna and that makes us apathetic towards worldly things. We become detached from worldly things. Yeah, so it's like, as I said, if you go to yatra and sometimes, you know, we may be physically exhausted, but then some darshan, some kirtan, just forget the body. Just feel uplifted in a very extraordinary way. It could say literally a trans-physical way. So that's...
It seems that those kind of experiences are very important in life.
Yeah, actually that is the kind of experience I was saying that we need to cherish it. Whether we share it or not, but we need to cherish it somehow.
I can verse that you quoted, 11:2:42, that configuration and Bible thereafter, and you said, Chesha, if you can think of Kaaba, the Padiman, Nasha, Tashu, Tashu. So that experience, experiencing Krishna's presence, is compared to
satisfying the
super important for us. It seems that that's kind of something that really validates it. It kind of comes on that transcendental platform where there's no question that it is a spiritual experience. It's all this transcendental bliss.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Prabhu, the nature of my mind is always to get caught up with details, what you're mentioning about. Like, you know, for example, when you're talking about this Narayan Sena, the question comes that, you know, Krishna knows, and even those who are in Narayan Sena, they know that if I'm going to fight on behalf of Duryodhan, we all will be finished. But still, Krishna sends them to Duryodhan. So in that case, it's not love and separation, it is death and separation. They're practically killed there. As a devotee, like, you know, I would think that thank God I was not in Narayan Sena.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah.
That's good.
Okay. So in the Narayan Sena soldiers, they are told to fight on Duryodhana's side. And if they are also devotees of Vishnu, of Krishna, then how can they fight against Krishna and they die while fighting against Krishna? It's death and separation. So yeah, actually, there are different frames of consciousness. For example, if he's in different situations, and what is anukul, what is pratikul, that can vary. So for example, there is the story of Maricha. Now, Maricha is a demon, he's a shape-changer, shape-shifter, and he is conscripted, practically forced by Ravana to join in the conspiracy to have Sita abducted. And first, when Ravana comes, he tells him, you know, Ram is so powerful, don't mess with him. And then he hears and goes back. But then afterwards, again, Shurpanakha comes and incites him, describes Sita's beauty. And then he comes back. And then he says that, I have not come here to hear your advice. I have come here to give instruction. He says, either you help me or I'll kill you. So at that time, Maricha thinks, you know, actually, if I have to die, better let me die at Ram's hands instead of Ravana's hands. Now, there are different Ramayana commentators who have actually analyzed this incident in two opposite ways. Some say that actually this shows his bhakti. Although he was a demon, and he had been hit by Ram's, he had been filled with fear on earlier being hit by Ram's arrow, but now because of that, he had been remembering Ram, even if in fear, and now he had developed faith in the glory of Ram. That's why he wanted to die at the hands of Ram. So, but there are other Ramayana commentators who say that actually, you know, if he's a devotee, he should be serving the Lord. He should not be thinking about how I am dying. So in thinking that at whose hands I am dying, he is actually doing disservice to Ram. So he's thinking that how I am going to die, he's thinking, but he's not thinking whether I am serving Ram or I am causing disservice to Ram. So he says this is a very selfish calculation. Now, from one perspective, both are true, from different perspectives. One is that, okay, anyway I am going to die, better let me die at the hands of Ram. The other is, okay, you know, everybody has to die, but you have to serve the Lord. That is more important. So that way there can be different perspectives. And, you know, we can't know the inside of anyone's consciousness. So in the case of the Narayan Sena, see, the Kshatriyas, in general, their ethos was that they, at least in the way it is depicted in the Mahabharata, then I'll explain how it is depicted in the Bhagavatam. The Mahabharata is largely a book that is at the Karmakanda level. There are bhakti sections in there. The Bhagavad Gita is there, the Vishnu Sahasranam is there, Narayaniya is there. These are all bhakti sections, but largely it's at the Karmakanda level. And in the Karmakanda understanding, and if a Kshatriya fights heroically and dies on the battlefield, then that Kshatriya will be elevated to heavens. That is the understanding, broadly speaking. So, the warriors over there at that time, they feel that yes, if there is a war and if we fight and we die, we will be elevated to heaven, and that is auspicious for them. That is what their destination. They think of them. That's from the Karmakanda perspective. That's why the Kshatriyas over there, even on the Kaurava side, they fight forcefully because they either have, Mahava says, they had victory or heaven in their minds, and they fought. Now, in the case of the Narayan Sena, they knew that they were going to, if they fight against Krishna, they will die. But they had that attitude of service to Krishna. And this is what Krishna wants us to do, so we will do it. And in one sense, it was a difficult service for them. But that's what Krishna wanted them to do, so they accepted that service. And because they died, Yahave Krishna Mukharvinde, the Bhagavatam describes that those who beheld, Netrai Pibanti Naina Abhirama, those who saw Krishna and drank his beautiful form with their eyes, they actually attained liberation. So even the Narayan Sena, they fought for Krishna, they fought against Krishna. And the fact is that they died in the presence of Krishna and they attained liberation. So that is the important thing. And because it was by Krishna's will that they were fighting against him, so it was a difficult service that Krishna gave them and they accepted it. Okay. So thank you very much. We will continue. You want to say something?
Well, I want to have a question on previous class. So do you want me to ask it now? Later.
Yeah, I think we'll have a break. The next verse, at the end of that, we'll have some discussion. Thank you. Hare Krishna. So 4, 5, is that okay?
Sure.
Later.
Last one.